Well, as we've already said, we're going to be talking about discipline tonight. And, you know, when I was a kid, one of my least favorite words was discipline because I received a lot of it. But we're going to talk about not that kind of discipline, but we're going to talk about self-discipline. You know, normally you don't need to focus on yourself. You need to focus on Jesus. You need to focus on others. But tonight it's okay to focus on yourself. And let me give you just a few illustrations of discipline from a athletic standpoint that indicate, that show great self-discipline. Now we're going to ultimately make some application of this in regard to spiritual discipline, obviously, but there are some tremendous examples of discipline out in the athletic world. For instance, did you know that Larry Bird, back when he was still in high school, your age, he would get up before 6 o'clock in the morning, and I've heard two different stories. One was that he would shoot about 1,000 free throws before the bus would come to pick him up. Another was he would shoot about 500. But, you know, that's why, even though he's been retired from professional basketball for many years, most of you still recognize that name, don't you? I mean, you know who I'm talking about, right? And you know, because he had this tremendous self-discipline to do that. Kobe Bryant, who retired just a couple of years ago from many years of playing professional basketball, had something he called the 6-6-6 routine. Kind of appropriate for him. But as you, he would practice for 6 months, 6 days a week, 6 hours a day. And he would spend 2 hours weightlifting, 2 hours on running, and 2 hours just on basketball. Tremendous self-discipline, at least athletically. Another example that you can throw out as you think about that is Kevin Durant. I understand that Kevin Durant will arrive at the arena 3 hours before the game starts, and that he will go through his stretching and his training and all that kind of stuff, and then shoot a couple of hundred shots. Tremendous self-discipline. In fact, among NBA players, they have a favorite saying. And that saying is, there are two buses leaving for tonight's game. The 2 p.m. bus is leaving for those who need extra practice. And the empty bus is leaving at 5 o'clock. Tremendous self-discipline. Here's one more example. Kyle Korver. Kyle Korver, I understand, used to, and I guess he still does, would run underwater with an 85-pound rock. And when I first heard that, I thought, was he standing in the shower, you know, with a big rock, you know, and he's running underwater or something like that? No, he is underwater. And from what I understand, he's running in water, under the surface of the water, holding this big rock in some areas where even great white sharks have been seen. You know, I don't know if that's tremendous self-discipline or he's just crazy. But you know, this is self-discipline to arrive at a certain level of athleticism. We are going to talk about tonight, and ultimately, because we are members of the church and we're involved in spiritual activities, not arriving at a level of athleticism. That's fine if that's what you want to do with your life. But we're going to talk about arriving at a level of spirituality and being the right kind of person, the kind of person that God wants us to be. Yet the topic tonight is called lack of discipline. And the overall theme for these area-wise is, what in the world is going on? And one of the big problems we see in the world, one of the reasons the world is not as spiritual as it ought to be, is because there's this lack of discipline and lack of self-discipline among all kinds of people. That doesn't need to describe us as God's people. We need to be disciplined people. And so I'm going to use a negative example tonight that we can learn from the mistakes of this man, and this man that I would describe as one of the least disciplined men in the history of the world. Certainly, as you read about in scriptures, he may not be the most undisciplined man, but he is one of the least disciplined men in the pages of Scripture. And we're going to look at him from a negative standpoint so we can learn from his mistakes and how not to make those. And consequently, I hope the end goal of this is we will become more self-disciplined ourselves. The man we're going to talk about tonight is Samson. Judges chapters 13, 14, 15, and 16 talk about Samson. In fact, there is almost more material in the book of Judges about Samson than about any of the other judges. He has a lot of information. There's a lot of information given about him in the book of Judges. But we're going to see, as you look at his life in these chapters, that indeed he was a very, very undisciplined individual when it came to spirituality and self-discipline. In fact, there are about five or six ways that I want us to think about Samson in regard to his lack of self-discipline that we can learn from him how to avoid that and to plug in the positives and to be better people, to be more self-disciplined in our service for God. Number one, Samson had no self-discipline about relationships. We're going to come back to this one more than once in the course of this lesson. But number one, he had no self-discipline about relationships. Look at Judges chapter 14 and look at verses 1 through 3. In chapter 13, we have the story of Samson's parents and his birth. Apparently, they were fairly upright individuals, fairly spiritually minded individuals, and yet Samson is raised in this home, and he does not turn out exactly the way perhaps his parents had hoped and prayed that he would. And in chapter 14, he comes on the scene. Now, he's a grown man. I hesitate to say he's an adult. At least I would sure hesitate to say he's mature. But he comes on the scene perhaps as a person who's no longer a kid. And he had no self-discipline about relationships. Like I said, we'll come back to this, but look at this one. Now, Samson went down to Timnah and saw a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now, you've got to understand that the Israelites were God's people, and the Philistines were part of the enemies of God's people. In fact, in this book of Judges, you see several times where the Philistines are causing all kinds of problems for the Israelites. They are pagans. They are not faithful followers of God. They're not followers of God at all. And these are the people in the law of Moses that Samson was supposed to be living under. God has said, don't intermingle with these people because they may pull you away from me. And so Samson goes down and he finds a daughter, a young lady, a lady among the daughters of the Philistines. Verse 2, so he went up and he told his father and mother, saying, I have seen a woman in Timnah of the daughters of the Philistines. Now therefore, get her for me as a wife. Then his father and mother said to him, is there no woman among the daughters of your brethren or among all my people that you must go and get a wife from the uncircumcised Philistines? And Samson said to his father, get her for me, for she pleases me well. The impression that you have here is that Samson is basing this relationship pretty much on the physical. Notice how he says that in verse 2, I have seen a woman. You know, whoa. He is physically attracted to this woman. I have seen a woman, and I want her for myself. Even though, and here his father reminds him, you don't need to do that. Is there not someone among God's people? That's really what his father's saying. Is there not someone among God's people that you can have a relationship with and marry? But Samson had no self-discipline about his relationships. There was no consideration of the spiritual consequences of this potential relationship. And when we think about the relationships that we have in this world, not just boyfriend-girlfriend relationships, but all relationships, friendships, do we take into consideration the potential spiritual consequences that may result from those relationships?
oftentimes we can have very many positive spiritual consequences when we make the right kind of friends and have the right kind of relationships. But Samson was not doing that. And we have to sometimes sit back and examine the relationships and friendships that we have to see if they are ones that are going to draw us closer to God or pull us away from God. You know, really, you have a choice about the kind of friends that you make. You can, and ultimately, from Samson, we're looking at something here. You can choose friends that will bring you closer to God, or you can choose friends that will drag you faster to hell. It is our choice. And oftentimes that calls for self-discipline in our hearts and minds about the kind of relationships that we have. I have seen a woman. I want her. I have seen a friend. I have seen a man, the young ladies might say. I've seen this guy. I've seen this person. And I want this person in my life. With no consideration that relationship potentially may destroy me spiritually. And so we've got to learn from Samson some self-discipline about relationships, because, you know, he didn't have it. But you and I need to see how we ought to have it. Friendships. People ultimately that you date. You know, probably many of you have in mind some things about somebody you'd like to marry. And maybe you have a list. You know, I don't want to marry somebody who drinks. I don't want to marry somebody, you know, who smokes. I don't want to marry somebody who curses. You know, all kinds of lists. That's just kind of a tip of a list there. Maybe you would make about things that you don't want in that person. Then don't date people like that. Okay, this is not complicated. If you don't want to marry somebody that drinks alcohol, don't date somebody that drinks alcohol. Have some self-discipline about these kind of relationships. Because let me tell you something. You are going to marry somebody that you date. I don't think anybody in this room is just going to walk up to a total stranger and say, let's get married. You are going to marry somebody that you date. And you don't need to get so involved in a relationship with somebody whose life is headed the wrong direction spiritually that you get too involved, you get too committed, and then pretty soon you don't think you can get out of it. Because I've seen her or him, and she or he pleases me well. Have some self-discipline about relationships. Let's think about something else about Samson. We'll say just a little more about this relationship thing with Samson before the lesson is over. But number two, Samson had no self-discipline in regard to his treatment of other people. He had no self-discipline in regard to his treatment of other people. When you continue looking at chapter 14, you will see that Samson does eventually take this woman of the Philistines as wife, and that there's a celebration, you know, a wedding feast and so on. It was traditional back in these cultures and these many years ago prior to that. And perhaps you remember the little incident that happened while all this was going on, where Samson, with his bare hands, killed a lion. And then a little later on, he finds that lion, and some bees have made a nest in it, and they produce some honey. And then Samson gets some of that honey, and he gives it to his family, and so on. And then I want you to notice that when you're looking at chapter 14, you get down to verse 12. He says, Samson says at this gathering, let me pose a riddle for you. If you can correctly solve and explain it to me within 7 days of the feast, I will give you 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. But if you cannot explain it to me, then you shall give me 30 linen garments and 30 changes of clothing. And so he posed the riddle to them that's based on the honey they got from the carcass of the dead lion that he killed with his bare hands. And while there's nothing wrong with telling riddles and nothing wrong with having a little bit of fun, I want you to notice that when you look at this, Samson is taunting these people. When you look at this, and you hear and you see what he's saying, you're beginning to pick up on some of his attitude that he has and how he treats other people. Because he thought he had come up with a riddle that no one could solve, and really he had, hadn't he? I mean, who could figure this out? And so he thought, you know, I have the upper hand, therefore I'm going to go in and I'm going to take advantage of these people. I'm going to get a bunch of whole new clothes because of it. You see, he had no self-discipline about how he treated other people. And except for the fact that the people that he posed the riddle to, you know, were able to persuade his wife-to-be to drag it out of him, and she did, except for the fact that that happened, he would have been successful in this, of taking advantage of these people. You know, there's a big difference between telling a joke or telling a riddle and a little bit of harmless fun and taking advantage of people. And having no self-discipline about the kind of relationships and treatment of other people. You know, I kind of get the impression, you know, as this was going on here, as you study Samson and you look at him, I kind of get the impression that he was kind of an arrogant guy. And that he walked into this thing and said, well, let me tell you guys a riddle. You know, and if you can solve this, then I'll give you some clothes. But if you can't solve this, because he thought I got him. He's taking advantage. And you just see, you can just kind of hear the arrogance. You can just kind of hear the taunting in his voice a little bit. As I've thought about this particular scene playing itself out, I've tried to think, you know, who would be like Samson? And, you know, the movie Beauty and the Beast and Gaston? You know, this is Gaston, okay? You know, just this arrogant guy that everything revolves around me. And I'm gonna be the king of the show. I'm going to be the life of the party. And all the attention has got to be focused on me. At the expense of other people. And so Samson had no self-discipline about how he treated other people. And at the expense of other people, he would make himself the star of the show. And you really kind of pick up very strongly that he's an arrogant guy. Have you noticed as you read Judges 13, 14, 15, and 16 that, interestingly enough, that the Bible never really talks much about Samson's friends? Because I don't think he had any. And I don't think he had any because of the way he treated everybody. I'm not going to line up to be his friend. How do you treat people? How do you treat the people in your homeroom class? How do you treat the people at the lunch table? How do you treat your friends? How do you treat your associates? How do you treat the people you work with, those of you who have jobs? How do you treat other people? Do you promote yourself and put yourself in the star place at their expense? We need to have some self-discipline in our treatment of other people. Number three, let's move on. Number three, Samson had no self-discipline about anger. Samson had no self-discipline about anger. Again, we look at chapter 14, and we see in this chapter that Samson doesn't win his riddle. And that these men, because they have convinced his wife by threatening her to find out what the answer is, she finally finds out the answer. She tells them under the threat of her very life. And then Samson responds to that. And as we look at Judges chapter 14, verse 19, it says, "The Spirit of the Lord came on him mightily, and he went down to Ashkelon and killed 30 of their men, took their apparel, and gave the changes of clothing to those who explained the riddle. So his anger was provoked, and he went back up to his father's house." You see, Samson thought he had the upper hand. He thought he was going to get away with this, and he thought he was going to benefit and take advantage of everybody else, but he didn't. And it didn't work out the way that he thought it was going to work out, because it didn't work out the way that he thought it was going to work out. He got angry.
He got mad. And this is not the only incident, by the way. We'll talk about another one in a moment, where it's pretty strongly indicated in the Scriptures that this man did not control his temper very well. Samson had no self-discipline, very little self-discipline about anger. And even though he was the one that was taking advantage of these people, and when the tables got turned on him, he got angry.
Well, what about me? What in the world is going on is our theme, right? And one of the problems with the world sometimes is a lack of self-discipline. It doesn't and shouldn't be our problem as God's people. Well, what about my self-discipline in regard to anger? What about me? Do I sometimes blast out of control? Do I yell, scream, break things? You know, it's kind of like the Tasmanian devil, you know, going around and I'm just a terror to everybody around me. Slam things around, throw things around. Knew a guy one time who was out with his dad and he got upset about something and he slammed his car door. And when he slammed his car door, his window went and broke into 1,000,000,000,000 pieces. And his dad said, well, next time we get a car, I guess we'll have to get plastic windows. That didn't really help the guy's feelings a whole lot either. What about me in anger? Do I have self-discipline? Self-control? Or do I just rage out of control? Like the Tasmanian devil or like Samson and all kinds of negative consequences follow. Self-discipline about my temper, my anger. You know, the Bible says in the New Testament, be angry, but I want you to notice the very next words, and sin not. It's possible to be angry. It's possible to be upset. It's possible to be, you know, not happy about something without sinning. But, you know, that's a dangerous place to find yourself in. Things are going to happen that are going to make you unhappy. Things are going to happen that are going to make you upset. I understand that. That happened to me too. But remember what the Bible says, be angry and sin not. Have some self-discipline when you're angry. Don't be like Samson. Let's move on. Let's move on to a fourth area here. Samson had no self-discipline about impulsiveness. Number one, it was about relationships. Number two, it was about treatment of others. Number three, it was about anger. Number four, it is about impulsiveness. In fact, we might say that this word impulsive is kind of at the heart of the definition of self-discipline. You know, they talk about impulse buys. You know, you go to the store, whether it's Walmart or a grocery store or whatever it may be, and you have an impulse buy. It's like, you know, they set things out on the counter or the end cap of the aisle that look really good, and they put them on sale, you know, take about 2 pennies off of what it really is. And you say, I want one of those, and you buy it. It's an impulse buy. You're impulsive about these kind of things. You know. When most of us in this room were a little bit younger, and when you were a little bit younger, you know, you would go to the grocery store, and maybe your mom would keep you strapped in the cart for a little while, you know, and you couldn't reach those kind of things. And then you get to the checkout aisle. You get to the checkout aisle. And right there at the checkout aisle, within reach of even of a little child in the cart, right there within reach is all kinds of candy that was put there, we parents believe, the night before by Satan personally. And you want that candy. And it's impulsive. And you gotta have it. And you reach over and you grab it. Samson, on a much greater level, was impulsive about the things that he did. He had no self-discipline. You know, we really don't necessarily expect a 3-year-old strapped in a grocery cart at Publix for 2 hours to have a lot of self-discipline, okay? I might be grabbing some candy by then. But we're talking about a grown man here. And we're talking about ourselves as adults or almost adults. We're talking about those of us in this room who are old enough to learn how to control our impulsiveness. In Judges 15, you read about at least one of his impulsive incidents. This is very closely related to this idea of anger, because often when we're angry, we do very impulsive things. But in Judges chapter 15, you'll see that after all of this incident with this woman from of the Philistines had kind of cooled down, Samson, you know, he went off angry. In verse 19 of chapter 14, it says he went back to his father's house. Well, in the meantime, you read in between the verses that Samson's wife of the Philistines was actually given to someone else to be someone else's wife. Well, Samson has finally cooled down a little bit, and he goes back, and he wants to reclaim his wife. And so the father of this lady, in chapter, the early verses of chapter 15, explains, well, I'm sorry, you know, she's been given to someone else now. How about her sister? And we read that Samson impulsively reacted to this scenario, and he impulsively reacted to this situation. And in verse 3, it says, Samson said to them, "This time I shall be blameless regarding the Philistines if I harm them." You see, he's already acting impulsively. He's already so angry, he's so mad, he's going to lash out and do something. And then you read what it is in verse 4 and 5. Samson went and caught 300 foxes, and he took torches, turned the foxes tail to tail, and put a torch between each pair of tails. And when he had set the torches on fire, he let the foxes go into the standing grain of the Philistines and burned up both the shocks and the standing grain, as well as the vineyards and the olive groves. Now, you got to give him credit for creativity and ingenuity. I mean, who would have ever thought of this? You know, I kind of wonder if maybe after he left the situation where he was told this news about his wife and so on being given to someone else, if maybe the first thing he saw was some poor old fox, and he said, "I know what I'm going to do." And so then he goes out and he finds 300 foxes. And here's what I'm going to... I mean, this is an impulsive, crazy idea. But when we get angry, and when we're not self-disciplined, we do crazy things. We do stupid things. We do harmful things. We do mean things. And then just like Samson, we say, "Not my fault." They start. Man, the man has no self-discipline. You know, we get upset about something, or we have a falling out with our sibling. You know, upstairs, we walk downstairs in the kitchen, and we pick up the toaster and throw it across the room. Who told you that was a good idea? I mean, why do we do things like that? Because we don't have self-discipline. And we're acting like Samson. And this idea of impulsiveness gets at the very heart of the definition of a lack of self-control. Let's have it, have self-control, rather than being like Samson and so impulsive. Number five. Here's something else that Samson was impulsive about, and that's revenge. You see it right here in the story that we've already looked at, where he burned down all the standing grain and the vineyards of all these people of the Philistines. But you also see it when you continue looking at the story, and you continue looking at the incident, because now, you know, he's done this, and so they get mad at him, and they, you know, he gets this battle going on and so on. And then in verse 11 of chapter 15, you read, 3,000 men of Judah went down to the cleft of the rock of Edom and said to Samson, "Do you not know that the Philistines rule over us? What is this that you have done to us?" You see, Samson's caused this big stink over here. He's caused this big problem. The Philistines are an oppressing nation. And some of his fellow Israelites come and they say, "Samson, what are you doing? You need to think about this. These people are going to make life even worse for us than it already is because of how impulsive and crazy and mean you're being to them." Look at Samson's answer in the last of verse 11. He said, "As they did to me, so I have done to them." That sounds like my 7-year-old brother when, you know, we were kids. "You started it. It's your fault. If you hadn't been born, this wouldn't have happened." and we say things like this, and we then want to take revenge. We want to get even. And all of this is anger and impulsiveness kind of all swirling together. And it becomes a driving force in our mind and our heart that, you know, he hurt me, I'm going to hurt him bigger and better. He was mean to me, I'm going to be meaner to him. And this cycle just becomes a vicious cycle, and it gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And you wonder why people don't get along with one another. You wonder why the theme for our airwaves is what in the world is going on. You wonder why tonight we're talking about a lack of self-discipline. You see, this is all part of it. And I'm trying to learn from Samson, and I'm trying to help all of us learn from Samson before you go out here and you make some of these huge mistakes. And you have these big heartaches and life crashes and wrecks and make disasters for yourselves. Because it's a mess. And if you don't make the mess to start with, you don't have to clean it up. And I'm trying to encourage you to learn from the mistakes of this man about revenge and impulsiveness and anger and relationships. And don't make those same mistakes. Because we have to look at ourselves and, you know, what about me? Do I think like this? You know, could Judges 15:11, as they did to me, so I have done to them, is that my motto? Is that my theme? Is that how I treat others and regard others? See, that can't describe me. It describes Samson, and man, he's a loser. But it shouldn't describe me. But now, let's think about one final thing about a lack of self-discipline on Samson's part. And that is that he had a lack of self-discipline. He had no self-discipline about morality. I think we've already seen that back in chapter 14. You know, I've seen a woman, get her, she pleases me well. But while some might debate that the relationship in chapter 14 is just purely physical, maybe he really did love the woman, maybe he really did want to be a good lifelong husband to her, you can't debate it in chapter 16 with a woman named Delilah. Because the text clearly tells us in chapter 16, she was a prostitute. This was a physical, immoral relationship. And that's what he wanted. It seems that almost every time you see Samson in these chapters dealing with a member of the opposite sex, it's immoral. And Samson had no self-discipline about these issues of morality. She was a harlot. She was a prostitute. And it seems that his relationships primarily with members of the opposite sex were driven by sex and pleasure. And that morality was not really on the table. Morality was not really something that he took into consideration. We've already talked about this a good bit in point number one about relationships, period. But you have to think about this in regard to those people that you are romantically interested in. Those people that you might like to ask out on a date or be asked out on a date by. Are they really the kind of people that are exemplary morally? Are they wholesome? Are they Christians trying to faithfully follow the Word of God? What about my friendships, my relationships, and how I control myself around members of the opposite gender? Will I stand up for what is right? Will I do what is right? Will I be moral in all things? Several years ago, I heard a man speaking about an incident that had happened at the congregation where he preached. This is many years ago, many miles from here, many years ago. But he was telling about a man in the congregation where he preached whose son had kind of been dating a girl that they weren't exactly that crazy about, but she was a nice girl. And he said that one day, his son was driving this girl somewhere, and they were, you know, just going down one of the city roads, city streets. And they stopped at a stop sign. And while they were stopped at that stop sign, this young lady made a vulgar move on him. And the young man put the car in park, turned it off, took the key out, got out, and said goodbye. And he walked away. The story that the father told was that was the happiest and most happiest I've ever been to pay a $150 tow bill. Because my son stood for what was right. He made a right decision, and he was self-disciplined about a moral relationship. We need to have that self-discipline about relationships. Samson did not have it. Let's learn from him the terrible consequences of what happens when we do not. You see, Samson, as the story continues in his relationship with this prostitute, eventually ends up captured by his enemies, taunted by them, eyes gouged out, and made a slave. And when you look at the end of his story in chapter 16, they bring him out, the Philistines do, in one of their pagan temples to taunt him again and just to show him off as a trophy of victory over the battles that they had and the problems he had caused, and now he was well under their thumbs. You may recall from the story that it was through God's devising that Samson's long hair was the source of his strength, and eventually Delilah pried that out of him and they shaved his head, and now he had no strength. And yet, after leading that very undisciplined life, and I don't know how old Samson was by the time we get to chapter 16, but after leading a very undisciplined, ungodly life, I think during that time that he was a slave, and during that time that his head had been shaven and he had no physical strength, that Samson had what we will sometimes call a come to Jesus moment. And that during that time, Samson finally learned to depend on God. Because when they finally brought him out and they wanted to taunt him, Samson no longer relies on himself, but he prays to God. And he asks for strength just one more time. And he pulls down the pillars of that building. And in so doing, he dies, but he also is able to eliminate hundreds of his enemies, hundreds of the enemies of God's people. And interestingly enough, Hebrews chapter 11, that great hall of fame of faith, Hebrews chapter 11 even mentions him for his faith. I think he learned. I wish he had learned it a lot sooner. But I think he learned. Because it takes a lot of self-discipline to do something that will save others and cause the end of your own life. But that's exactly what he did. He did something heroic. He took down enemies that would have hurt his fellow countrymen in Israel, and he saved others, but in the process he lost his own life. It takes a tremendous amount of self-discipline to do something like that. But you know, isn't that exactly what Jesus calls us to do with our own lives? Mark chapter 8, verse 34. Whoever desires to come after me, let him deny himself and take up his cross daily and follow after me. For whoever desires to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake and the gospel's will save it. Isn't that exactly what Jesus calls us to do? And even further, isn't that exactly what Jesus did? Did not Jesus do something heroic? Did not Jesus do something that called for the greatest amount of self-discipline in the history of the world? If Samson is one of the most undisciplined men in history, Jesus, by far, is the most disciplined man in history. Because he did something to save others that caused him to take and lose his own life. I implore you. I want to put this right down, you know, at your level. Don't be like Samson. I mean, maybe he got it right in the very end, but he sure did pay an awful price. Don't be like Samson. Don't wait until an undisciplined life makes you blind, bound, and broken. Because it may just be too late. What in the world is going on? Let me tell you what's going on. Jesus died for you so that you might know the blessing of salvation through obedience to Him. That's what's going on. That's what needs to be going on in your life, in my life. And so if that's what needs to happen in your life, and you need to commit your life to Jesus by being baptized in the name of Jesus Christ and added to His church, or you need to be restored because your life hasn't been what it ought to be, we encourage you tonight, right now, would you come as we stand and we sing.